Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Canadian jazz trumpeter and composer John Korsrud of the Hard Rubber Orchestra. He talked about their new 2022 CD, Iguana. It's their fifth release in their 32nd year as a band. The Hard Rubber Orchestra was formed in 1990 by John, and they have commissioned over 50 composers, including Kenny Wheeler, Darcy James Argue, Peggy Lee, Brad Turner, Christine Jensen, and so many others. It's a great interview. Enjoy.
Thank you for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
No, of course. Thank you.
The Hard Rubber Orchestra, you release your fifth CD, Iguana. It's your 32nd year together. Talk to me a little bit about this coming out under the guise of COVID easing and more live shows. Just how does this release feel for you?
It actually, in a sense, it was a COVID release as far as we're an ensemble. We've been around 32 years, and what we perform probably three times a year. We've traveled across the country and did multimedia shows and all that sort of thing. And we were supposed to have a bunch of pieces composed and premiered over the last couple of years. And because that couldn't happen because of no live concerts, of course, so we turned them into studio productions. And even then that I had to use musicians who had their own studio. So we basically just gave the parts to the musicians, and they recorded the parts and then sent them back to us. And then we mixed it remotely. So it really was done remotely. So it was actually quite an amazing feat to do. But it all got done.
Talk to me a little bit about how you put this album together and what you hope the listener gets from it.
Well, I mean, we're always a high-energy ensemble. Our direction is halfway between contemporary classical and then one other thing. So my interest is modern jazz, contemporary classical music. The very first track is Harry Staphylakis. He's a music composer. He lives in New York. He's the artistic director of the Winnipeg New Music Festival. And his background is heavy metal music. So, that's his kind of his love and his passion. So when you hear the first track, you definitely hear lots of, how well he knows the history and the nuance of like heavy metal music. All the pieces are very exploratory. I'm looking for music that's kind of, you can't be defined by genre. You can't say it's a jazz piece or it's a classical new music piece. That's what I'm interested in. So all the pieces are high energy, kind of genre defined. That's what I hope the kind of listener is looking for, that kind of music.
So you guys were founded in 1990. You've been together quite a while. What has been the key ingredient to making this an enjoyable artistic collective?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I always consider the audience in mind always. I try to do very entertaining shows. You know, the shows are very musically exploratory, but I always try to make entertaining shows. And I try to present new music in, audience-friendly ways, often using doing kind of fun opera. We've done ice shows. We've done two ice shows. I've done avant raves. As far as keeping the collective happy, I just hope to keep the music at a high quality. I mean, we're all good friends. We're all located in Vancouver, Canada, and I always use the best musicians I can get. And that's one thing you've probably known from the other musicians you've worked with and talked to. Musicians like playing with good musicians, and that's what kind of makes it worthwhile for them. So I just try to keep the music standards as high as possible and keep the music very exploratory and kind of crazy.
So talk to me a little bit about your background. Where were you born and raised, and how did music become your passion and your profession?
Yeah, thanks. Sure. I'm born and raised in Regina, Canada. I've been living in Vancouver, Canada since I was 4 years old. My dad was a huge jazz fan, part-time drummer. So right from the womb, I grew up listening to Art Blakey, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Jimmy Smith, all that kind of stuff. So I grew up with a real love for jazz. And then I was always attracted to more I had a very eclectic taste in music, so I loved everything. Loved more kind of the crazier music. Eventually, dabbled in free jazz for a while, was attracted to it. But then I went to UBC to study composition at University of British Columbia, and I was introduced to a lot of new music composers, such as Ligeti and Ludoslavski and stuff like that. And then I actually was able to go to Holland for a couple of years to study with a very renowned composer named Louis Andriessen, who just died this year, actually. And you know, he was probably one of Europe's most recognized composers. So that was quite the experience living in Amsterdam. And then I had a long association with Amsterdam for the next 10 years. I was either going back doing commissions or playing trumpet. I'm a trumpet player myself. And then, you know, before that, I was studying new music composition at the university. So that's kind of my background. So, you know, I never write swing, so I tend to incorporate a lot of 20th century techniques into like kind of funk music and things like that. And when I'm writing for classical ensembles, which I do, I've written a handful of orchestral commissions, like one, but including like the American Composers Orchestra in New York and the Vancouver Symphony, and I try to bring in a more jazzy elements into that music.
What is it that you like the best about being a performer and being a musician? You know, I mean, it's you've been at it for quite a while, but what is it that continues to bring you back and has been kind of the key to your longevity?
I was going to say, I'm into it for the girls. I think every musician will tell you the same thing. What do I get out of it? I guess I enjoy the challenge of it more than anything else. You know, even when I first started composing, it was like, why is this so difficult? And I think that's what just kind of kept me coming back. And of course, just my love of music. I mean, music means everything to me. And I'm sure all of the people you interview, you'll probably say the same thing, that music just means everything to them. And I like music that I don't understand. You know, if I hear something that really works, but I can't really quite figure what's going on, I'm really fascinated by that. But I'm also fascinated by groove and things like that, and anything with kind of momentum and that kind of impetus. And that's kind of something you can't define, and you can't even intellectualize it very much. And so I'm attracted to those kind of things. I just love music more than anything, and I love music that challenges me. And, you know, in the same way when I play trumpet, you know, I just go, why is this thing so difficult? You know, why can't I, took golf a couple of years ago, too, the same thing. It's like, why can't I hit this ball? So, you know, I think it's those kind of things just kind of keep you coming back.
So if you could get into a time machine or a jazz DeLorean and go back in time and see a musician, anybody in the history of jazz, who are you going to go see? Where are you going to go?
Jazz DeLorean. Wow. Yeah. That's a good question. I think Clifford Brown would be amazing. You know, he died so young, 24 or 26 or something like that. And I think, you know, or Miles with the Herbie Band, that, you know, that one would be amazing. You know, Coltrane, of course, you know, with the Greek Quartet, you know, you hear all those kind of stories. Have you asked that question amongst others? What do most people say when you ask them that?
The number one answer is always Coltrane. I mean, like, right, out of everybody, it's always kind of Coltrane. But, you know, there's interesting variations on it. I mean, even Louis Armstrong's a pretty big one, because that was kind of the beginning, mm-hmm, and the birth of things. But I think a lot of it kind of resonates around that golden era of jazz with Miles and, I mean, even Clifford and all of those cats. That's pretty common for an answer.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see the Coltrane. Cause, you know, I remember talking to someone else. Who was I talking to? It was David Lehman was saying that he would see them in Seattle. And he said by, you know, just the energy of the band, that everyone in the club would all be on their feet, like just standing. He wouldn't even remember it standing up. It's that, you know, the energy just kept building and building and building, and suddenly everyone's on their feet. They just seemed to have that kind of power, you know, and just the originality of the band at the time. I mean, who was doing that? You know, no one, really. So I can definitely see that being a common answer. And Louis, I mean, I'm personally not a huge Louis Armstrong fan. Not that there's anything wrong with him, but my taste kind of go towards like the later, more experimental side of jazz, like in late 60s, mid 60s, or around there.
You know, one of the reasons why I actually even came up with this question was all of the times that I've been down on 18th and Vine, and when I drive through that district, there's so much history. You know, going to the Mutual Musicians Foundation, about every musician that was alive for a span of like, 70 to 80 years came through and played at some club somewhere in Kansas City. And I thought, you know, even about Bird, like if you could catch him in the early days. So it's like, sometimes I feel like I'm swimming through ghosts when I get down to that district. And I think it's just interesting to see how people would navigate their time machine. So
yeah, I think Shawnee Barker would actually be a big one too. I think for a lot of people, you know, yeah. I would think that.
Yeah, yeah.
So are there any kind of interviewing you? What kind of mementos or monuments are in Kansas for Shawnee Barker? There must be some things there.
Well, down on 18 and Vine, they have a big statue, kind of a bust of him, his head, and behind him is the city. You know, the grave is there at Highland Park, and they every August they have the Charlie Parker celebration for his birthday, and they'll do a procession that will go from there, and it'll wind its way through 18 and Vine, and kind of it's and then all of the clubs in the area will do a little we'll have a whole variety of shows, but yeah, those are two of the biggest markers for him that are here. Yeah.
So is that kind of a jazz destination, like for musicians? Like it's a tourist destination where like tourists come for the birthday celebrations?
Yeah, they do, and we do have the American Jazz Museum, and that's a pretty big draw, and that's right next to the Negro Leagues Baseball Hall of Fame Museum as well. So that's kind of a destination out there on 18 and Vine, and of course we have the Blue Room, which is right next to the Jazz Museum. So I think so. I mean, Kansas City has the barbecue. We have a lot of fountains, and you know the jazz, of course, is world famous. So yeah, I think a lot of those things pull people in.
Right, and how's the scene there? It must be a very active scene there. It must be a great jazz city still, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it really actually is. You know, there was a time where it would ebb and flow, but now it's pretty consistent. There's a good amount of clubs every night. You look at the jazz calendar; it's flush with acts and performances, and people are coming into town, so cool. Yeah, it's good.
Can you maybe mention a few names that, like, of the last 30 years, anybody who's kind of gone on to New York to make names for themselves from Kansas?
Logan Richardson is a big one, and he went to New York, went to Paris, and I think he's in LA now. Harold O'Neill is another one that's from here, and he went to New York. And Herman Mahari is in Paris now. He did a lot of work here. The great Bob Bowman, the bassist, was he was in L.A. for a while. He came back here. He's in Montana now, but he actually spent a lot of time here. Todd Strait was in Portland for a while. He came back here. But, you know, people kind of bounce back and forth. But, yeah, there's, you know, Bobby Watson headed up the UMKC program here for quite a while. He retired a few years ago.
Is that Bobby Watson, the saxophone player?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are coming here now, you know, instead of this being like an educational springboard or a place where people, you know, decide they want to kind of test the waters and go to a bigger place. Kansas City's been a place where people are coming. I mean, Adam Larson's here. There's a lot of people that have come here.
I guess Vancouver has his own handful of expats who have gone to New York and do Ingrid Jensen. Do you know Ingrid?
Absolutely.
And Seamus Blake.
Yep.
You know, Seamus and Michael Blake, you may not know, but he was doing well for a while, Michael Blake.
Yeah.
And let's see, Michael Bublé is from here, and Diana Krall is from here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess we've had our own, you know, some talent has gone. Renee Rosnes is from here.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So quite a few, you know, a good handful of musicians from Vancouver, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you love jazz?
I like complex music. It was the music that I first heard as a kid. I mean, I love fast, complex music, but I also love early music, too. I love very kind of minimalist kind of music. I guess I like extremes. I like that it's exploratory. I like that it's everyone can put their own mark on things. You know, I like the classic jazz too, like, you know, the Dexter Gordon and all that kind of stuff. I also like knowing what's next on the horizon. And, you know, I'm always trying to be a little bit ahead of the curve. And my music, I try to do something no one else has done. So I try to write music I've never done before and also no one else has done, which is, and try to make it still be good music. as far as why I like jazz, I mean, and jazz is just it's such an undefinable term anyways. Like, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything these days, does it? I mean, there's as many kinds of jazz as there are. Like, if you ask a heavy metal person what kind of heavy metal music they like, there's 27,000 different kinds, and I think jazz is the same thing. I guess our music, the Hard Rubber Orchestra, is fairly avant to use that term, but it's more it's always composition based. These are all based around composers and things like that, and trying to, even though I employed jazz musicians, I wouldn't call our band a jazz band, but I employ jazz musicians because they're well-rounded. They can play funk, they can play rock, they can play free, they're good readers, and they generally have open, very good open minds. I also employ some classical musicians as well, who have a background in new music.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. I was going to follow that up with a little bit more about you. And, everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans. But ultimately, you live your life. Who do you think you are?
Well, I try to just do as good as I can as far as I try to make good music. And especially now that the world is kind of crumbling apart a little bit, I realize the best thing I can do is just try to make the world better in my immediate surroundings. So I'm just trying to make music, and I try to support other people's music, and I support other people's creativity. I do a lot of volunteering around Vancouver and try to create music for other people and for ourselves. And I'm always looking to find places and venues where we can put music in. And, I'm also an educator. I teach, I play trumpet, I produce concerts, I compose. I think my tastes are pretty far-reaching.
John, this has been great, man. Thank you for opening up. I appreciate your time. Good luck with the album and the return to the stage and everything else that comes your way this year.
Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate the call.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds and bands in Canada, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to John for his time, music, and story. Want to hear more interviews? Go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. For all things Joe Domino, visit JoeDomino.com, and there you can kick in via Patreon or PayPal. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.